This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
To Space City, a NWA on-demand podcast. I'm Pete, and I'm with my friend Johnny. Johnny, how you doing?
I'm doing quite good, quite good. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about today.
Yeah, tell me about it. I was, let me just tell me what I've been doing. I was at a Wrestle Circus show, and the part of the Hale Clan was in town for that, so I got to see
talk the
to,
clan.
Yeah, you know, that's the go-by.
A bunch of guys from the Carolinas should not call themselves a clan.
Man, I know, right?
Just a little advice.
But they don't wear masks, so it's all good. They don't hang people.
Oh, whoa! I was okay. Whoa, Jesus.
But yeah, I talked to Papa Hales and Dylan there for a bit.
How they doing?
I sat behind him at the show. Great. So that was all good. And then a lot of great stuff dropping in the television world. There's Iron Fist and penultimate episode on Star Wars Rebels showed up called Twin Suns, which was Darth Maul shows up and faces Obi-Wan or Ben Kenobi on Tatooine, and it was a pretty awesome episode. And people online are upset about some things in it. I absolutely loved it. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. Yeah, they didn't think the fight scene lasted long enough. Spoiler alert. Obviously, my voice is a little soft right now.
Screaming at Obi-Wan Kenobi. Go ahead.
It was more at the Wrestle Circus show. My voice is shot from yelling so loud and stuff, but bear with me. But a lot of geek stuff happening, and then we got
right now.
And then we got the big Ted DiBiase Odyssey dropping today on NWA On Demand, a show that I was there live for. So I was hoping this was going to show up, and it really met my memories. So I was so happy for that.
Dude. Okay, how old were you?
14. It was my 14th birthday. Perfect. We had the whole family there with mom, my brother, my father, my mother, me, and my friend Ryan. The whole clan. And the Schumacher clan were there for this one.
But 14 years old at the height of your wrestling fandom when you're a teenager, and this is how a show you're at for your birthday ends. It really couldn't get much better than that.
Nope, it was the show a week after my birthday. It was so great. And, you know, just random. It was either we were going to go to this show before or after, you know, or where we all can go. And this is the one my parents got tickets for. And then it so happened to be this just epicness. And, first as a kid, it was originally booked to be Doc Williams, obviously, in it. Mm-hmm. And it ended up not, but it ended up being this thing. And we'll get to it later because obviously finishing the show. But let's start off. And I call the first few matches, I call the Kansas City crew because this looks like they brought some talent from Kansas City. These are the guys who usually work Kansas City. We're going to open up with Lanny Poffo, which I'm not sure about him, but Hacksaw Higgins. I'd mentioned touched on this story before. He did my junior high or high school at an assembly.
That's right.
Yeah, in like 1990, I think it was. So I'd have been high school, I thought it was really cool. He was never a big star, but he worked a little bit on top in Kansas City, but he's mostly an underneath guy around the South. You could tell, like, in the footage, he's not a great worker, but he had good size. And I thought the match here was kind of fun, And I mean, yeah, Poffo was really athletic, and he's a guy who he's kind of an underrated worker, because if you get into, especially in the WWF, you know, he never really got a big push until finally becoming the Genius's manager or whatever.
Well, he was the Genius, the manager, Mr. Yeah. Perfect.
And but for the most part, he was treated as fodder for most of the time. But he, if you watch a lot of house shows, the guy was always one of the standouts on having. Well, he usually had one of the top three matches on a WWF house show.
Hey, he got to beat Hogan.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that was during his push as a manager, not manager. And but here, I thought he looked pretty good. I liked the early part with those big-time arm drags to start. Then Higgins snaps off a boot, and he starts using his size to get the heap. And Poffo escapes and starts cranking on the arm. And I thought Poffo's arm work, it looked pretty hurdy-looking. And then Higgins with an eye rake to try to set up the heat only momentarily. Then Poffo hits this drop kick, and Higgins does this great oversell that I loved. I mean, it was so campy. The match felt a little long. And then it looked like Poffo hit maybe the first ever moonsault. I mean,
yep.
I don't know when it was established, but that was definitely a moonsault here for the finish. Yep. And I liked Higgins as an underneath heel here. I liked his size. I think he's a guy who you can put in with somebody who's trying to move up the card, and he can do jobs for him. And it looks like he beat somebody intimidating looking, got a good, decent look. It was weird. The guy on the outside was his manager. I mean, he looked like a guy who was a fan who was lost, but they definitely
even notice him.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. It was definitely the manager, but they never showed him really close up or even acknowledge him. But the cops weren't, like, if he was a fan, the cops weren't worried about him because he was right there at the apron. It was weird. Yeah. I give it like a star and 3/4. It wasn't a great match, but I thought Poffo kept it pretty interesting. What were your thoughts here?
Well, as far as the moonsault thing goes, because people have always said, you know, Lanny Poffo used to do a moonsault before, and you know, we saw Muda do it here.
Oh, one other moment you could tell is the guy's Hacksaw Higgins, but clearly because Duggan is the Hacksaw.
I don't know. I was getting to the Hacksaw thing and Larry.
Yeah, the Posh did not call him Hacksaw at all.
Nope, not at all. I have a whole bit on that. Don't worry.
And this is from November 4th, 1983.
Yeah. So, but anyway, back to the moonsault, and then people would try to disqualify it because he did the one leg on the top turnbuckle and the other leg on the middle turnbuckle backflip in WWF.
Yeah.
They go, well, this is not a real moonsault. Well, on this footage right here, if real has to be both feet on the top rope, this is a real motherfucking moonsault. Now, who knows who did it first in America? I mean, who knows that Argentina Rocca didn't do it one night? It just doesn't. No one knows. You know, it's really hard to figure that kind of shit out.
Yeah, like, we've already seen it. We've seen in the footage, like, I forget the guy who did it, but someone clearly did the DDT way before Jake said he discovered it.
Yeah, you know, it's just wrestling. But as far as footage goes, I think this might be it. You know, it's a fucking moonsault. It's not high, but it's a backflip off the top rope. But, yeah, Hacksaw Higgins. It says Hacksaw Higgins on the graphic. But Paul Bosch ain't having none of it, because you know, he's like, he's the worst of the Hacksaws. We have Hacksaw Reed. We have Hacksaw Duggan. This Hacksaw Higgins, no good. What's his name? Larry. He's Larry Higgins.
Yeah.
And he just said Larry. He's just like, ugh.
Yeah, Bosch is like, I'm booking already the battle of the Hacksaws with Reed and Duggan. We do not need to confuse this any further.
Excuse it, people are like, how dare you even defile the name Hacksaw? you're the worst of the Hacksaws. But Paul, on the flip side, adores Lanny Poffo. He thinks he's just the best. He's talking up his dad.
Second generation wrestler.
He goes, his father was a wrestler and a good one. And that his father would have gotten him ready for this business. I mean, he's really talking about, and every time Lanny he keeps calling him Lonnie. He gets it right a couple of times. It's Lanny, it's Lonnie. It don't matter. He just thinks he's tremendous. And you think he was had physically, not physically, had financially invested in the guy. He's just the son of a great guy that he likes, and he respects this young man, and it's, he comes through. And then he even gets a great laugh on himself, because he says that Lonnie is from Lexington, Kentucky. And he says it, and he pauses, and he goes, and then continues talking about some other stuff, and just keeps giggling to himself, because he realizes he mixed up the syllables in Lexington, Kentucky, and he just was very amused with himself about it. I liked it. I thought it was charming. There's a people in the crowd that were great, because when Lonnie was on offense, this one guy goes, "Make him cry, Lanny." And I was like, okay, he'll fuck him. That'll make him cry from the rumors I've heard. And the guy just yelling at Hacksaw, "You're dead, boy. You're dead."
Yeah, you could hear him. It was an odd, it was weird, yeah.
He's like, "You're dead." It's like he meant it. He's a mobster at ringside and he owes him money. He's telling him what's going to happen after the matches. "You're dead." But they really loved Lanny Poffo. He didn't come in with the Kansas City crew. I think, wasn't he part of the Memphis?
He was definitely part of the Memphis. Yeah, he was probably part of the, he was working Mid-South probably at the time.
I could be totally wrong, but I kind of thought he was part of that whole thing where they brought in the Rock and Rolls and Dundee.
I think you're right. Yeah. Because he was working, because we've seen him already on the footage, and he was working as like an underneath type of guy, more of a jobber, because we saw him team in the Midnight Express's debut in Houston. He teamed with El Bracero and put the Midnights over.
Yeah, I mean, but he's funny. I always thought Lonnie Poffo was Lonnie. Now I'm saying it. I always thought that Lonnie Poffo was a fun guy to watch in the ring.
Yeah.
Wrestling wise, I mean, some of that stuff in, you know, when he first gets to WWF, when he's in that suit of armor and stuff, I'd be just like, ugh, I hated it at the time. Me and Joey would make, Wolfman would just make fun of it. Terrible, but, you know, it got over.
He had a really good chemistry, which would be odd later, since the guy ended up, this was not during the adorable Adrian Adonis gimmick, which was kind of what Poffo kind of did later on in his career. But they him and Adonis had really good matches all throughout. We're working right now. We're working on the end the Crockett set for Death Valley Driver. We're also here and there working on the redoing the WWF1. And he's had a lot of, from the house shows I've watched, man, he's had a lot of good matches. Not like, you know, all time classics, but really good matches. Like one of the top two or three on the show, and him and Adonis have probably about eight really good matches. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them ended up on the set.
Yeah, and that's just it. It's like you said, with Poffo and WWF, when we think of them, we think of what we've seen on TV, and usually on TV, it was like him getting squashed.
Yeah.
At an Allentown type show, or, you know, but then these house shows on stuff like the MSG Network and all the footage you guys are seeing, it's go out there and give me 15.
Yeah, you see, the WWF was notorious for going with the undercard guy, going 15, you know?
Yeah.
Poffo was one of those guys who, he was actually one of the guys who could actually go, and when they
gave him the time, he
had really good matches, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's why you're seeing these great matches. You're like, oh, fucking Lanny Poffo was good. He was really good. You know, and I always just wanted, I always loved the fact that Savage was always family first. He's like, "You're hire me, you hire my brother, you know, yep. Don't go fuck yourself." Because that's what he was talking about with his dad brought them up right.
Yep.
Because no matter what, family came first with them. You know, I'm a star, you're not bullshit.
He was a big reason why his father got inducted into the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And yeah, no. They're always the team. I mean, hell, Lanny, how much years did he get paid in WCW and never worked, you know?
And I love that.
Yeah.
but this was fun, and it was all about Lanny Poffo's performance and Paul Bosch just thinking that, just praising Lanny Poffo.
Yeah. I know. I totally agree. I thought I enjoyed it. Next up is the Oates brothers, Marty and I forget the other one,
but Jerry.
Jerry. And Marty is would become Marty Jannetty versus Doug
Vines. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait. So the one with the long hair was Marty Jannetty?
Yep.
I had no idea.
Because he was green as grass here. Yeah, it's Marty Jannetty.
I had no
idea. Yeah, it's Marty Oates. It's Marty Oates and Ted Oates. That's who it is.
And the Oates Oates. Or as Paul called them, Oates and Oates. Yeah. Which is like, oh, that's the worst band of all time.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, maybe we'll see a little flashes of Jannetty. He was absolutely terrible. Oh. He was really green as grass here. Wow. I mean, and in the match, you see, like, I'm like, okay, well, Jannetty, cool. I thought the Shine was really basic, tagging in and out, controlling with arm bars and twisting the arm. I thought the heels heat was real basic, too. I liked Doug Vine. I kind of liked his theatrics in the match, and he felt kind of slimy. While Art Cruz felt like the biggest babyface in the world, and he's working heel with Vines. But Marty comes across really green here. Even like when he does arm twists, they look terrible because they like it felt like he was like normally you do it from like your chest, but he was doing it from his like waist. It was really green. But Marty played face in peril because he's definitely the youngster in the team, and he was okay in the role. Then again, the heels heat section was pretty mediocre. Again, I gave a star and 3/4, but it was kind of neat to see an early Marty Jannetty popping up in Houston, and he was definitely this was definitely a. They were Kansas City. These guys were a tag team in Kansas City for a couple of years, and then finally Sean shows up in Kansas City, and then him and Marty end up in the AWA.
Right. Well, I had no idea this is Marty Jannetty. Yep. He's jacked up like fucking Quick Draw Rick McGraw. He's jacked here. He's like a little short, jacked weightlifter dude.
No charisma.
No, I had no idea. I mean, now that you mentioned it, that's the haircut.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, the haircut. But I had no idea who it was. Vines and Cruz. That sounds like the directions for a drug deal. I'll meet you at Vines and Cruz. Bring the money and keep quiet.
Oh, God. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
And then they're talking about the Battle Royal, or Paul is, I'm sorry, and listing all the big stars that are going to come out. And he gets to Dusty Rhodes. He goes, Dusty can smell money from a long distance. I'm like, yeah, I bet he does. Hey, baby, you know, Paul, I'm gonna do you a favor. I'm gonna show up in your territory, and I'm gonna win your battle royal for you, baby. We're gonna make big money. Okay, Dust, but you're not really that over here. Trust me. This was bland. But by the end of it, Oates and Oates had the crowd behind them.
Yeah.
Paul says, because he keeps getting their names mixed up. Like, throughout this entire match, he can't remember who's Marty and who's Jerry.
It's Ted and Jerry Oates. It's Ted Marty, and Jerry. Marty. Yeah, that's right. Marty went by Jerry at the time. Yeah.
Okay, whatever. I'm getting mixed up. I understand, Paul. But he says, I can't tell my oats from my oats. Maybe if they were Cheerios. Like that. Well done. But you just took the wind out of my sails and everything. I had no earthly idea that was Marty Jannetty.
So there you go. You definitely,
holy shit.
Which is kind of funny because I'm going to Mania, right?
Yeah.
And one of the indie shows I'm going to, they booked Marty Jannetty on working Bad Boy Joey Janela. It's called Joey Janela Spring Break, and there's a lot of fun gimmicks. Like, he booked the Invisible Man because he doesn't have too much money. He booked Earl Hebner for one fall out of two out of three fall of match.
That's funny.
Yeah, he booked.
That's
fucking
funny.
He booked Dink the Clowns on it, Glacier, and then along with like one of the matches why we're going so bad, it was Dan Severn's wrestling Matt Riddle. When Riddle's one of the big guys on the indie scene right now, it's just funny that I'm actually going to an indie show with Marty Jannetty wrestling a match, and now I'm here, which has got to be one of his early matches here, seeing him on Houston, so I'm sure I'll bring it up if I talk to him at the show and stuff.
See, now that booking sounds genius. I don't have a lot of money, so I'm going to purposely try to book an undercard that looks like the worst typical indie undercard of all time, but do it on purpose, you know?
Yeah.
And still give a match in the main event that has a hot indie guy. You spend all your money on Riddle.
Yeah, you got and Riddle everyone. And Dan Severn, and then they have Keith Lee and Leo Rush, which is kind of also another hot match. But yeah, it's just funny. Everyone's people are laughing about
it. How are you going to fill out your undercard? I don't know. A midget, invisible man, Marty Jannetty. It'll all work out.
Yeah, and the show starts at midnight, so it's a midnight show. Yeah.
Okay, then you're playing for your audience too. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we got tickets to that one. So.
That sounds like a blast.
Yeah, it is. I mean, me and Johnny P are like, yeah, let's do it, man. I mean, we got to do Severn and Riddle, just because Riddle's a former UFC fighter too, and Severn was UFC champ. Yeah. So we had to.
Bring Will to that one. It sounds like he'd love it.
Yeah, yeah. God, can you imagine? Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, he's not going, so yeah. There we go. Why don't we take – also, this is also on the same show, November 4th, 1983. And we have one more, but we'll take a break before we get to that. But it's kind of funny as this show was just full with that's why I think he brought the Kansas City guys because they were cheap. Because they had one big match on here, and it was JYD and Butch Reed. And you know they fucking probably sold the house, sold out, or did pretty damn good with that, with those guys on top here and stuff. But here, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back. And the next matchup, on paper, I'm like, wow, The Missing Link versus Crusher Khrushchev. Crusher Darso.
Crusher Darso, come on.
In an I Quit match, same date, November 4th, 1983. Link had been working Texas. I think Darso at this time might have been in Kansas City. I'm not 100% sure, or he might have been just getting his start here in the Mid-South territory.
I think he was getting his start here because he was a Mid-South boy. This was his initial gimmick.
Okay, and he's wearing ripped jeans. Ripped. He looked like Johnny Sorrow probably in the 70s on the beach.
I didn't wear my torn jean shorts quite riding up that high like a Daisy Dukes, but
right.
Yeah. But he had a rope belt. I did have one of those. We were poor, because he was.
But
supposed
you do
to
strike
be...
you do strike me as a guy who would wear like you'd cut your ripped jeans and make shorts out of them.
Oh well, who wouldn't?
Okay, I wouldn't. I'm just asking. Is that a Johnny Sorrow fashion statement that he's?
No, it's pretty much you've torn your jeans. Let's turn them into shorts.
Okay.
Anyway, this is what the people tune in for. Anyway, he's supposed to be a simple-minded, but lovable hillbilly character That's his initial character.
And
that's,
his shirt, I think he's a Hawaiian shirt, isn't it?
He's all like, hey, shucks, coming from the backwoods. He's like, he's pretty much supposed to be Hillbilly Jim.
Okay. Yeah. But in the worst attire, possible.
Yeah, because it's denim has been torn and he's got a rope belt. Now, I know about the gimmick is because when he switches, it's because Nikolai Volkoff basically dupes the simple-minded kid into becoming a commie, you know, and only because only a simpleton could fall for it. That's how they changed his character. And that character was great. This character isn't.
Yeah, exactly. This is a bottom gimmick. This is like Darso, like in his WCW Saturday Night Run almost, where it's just terrible gimmick after terrible gimmick.
But those were a
terrible gimmick. I mean,
those were tongue in cheek at least.
Yeah, this is just terrible. I mean, Darso might be the man who had so many shitty gimmicks. I mean, God, Blacktop Bully. The Payne Stewart one, the Repo Man.
That's the worst.
Was he an astronaut at 1.2? I think.
You got to weigh that against Crusher Khrushchev and fucking Demolition.
Yeah, and he had two money wins. Yep.
Against that, you know.
Yeah, he had that run from like 85 to probably 91, 92-ish. Where it was like, you know, he was money, you know? Yeah. But after that, yeah, but man, from then...
Yeah, that's a good run with some important characters.
Yep.
Especially Demolition. I'm not even a Demolition fan, but to deny... And that's, I think that's why he had so much goodwill with the fans, with all those gimmicks that followed after, you know, that nothing worked out and everything was silly and stupid. But he just... I think he had enough goodwill that people were like, okay, I'll watch, I'll give him a chance. No one was ever like, get this guy off my TV. It was, get this guy a better gimmick.
Yeah, you know, I never, for the longest time, I did not know he was the Repo Man.
Really?
Yeah, because his body had morphed so differently. I mean, because, you know, and with Demolition, he had the face paint on and stuff, so it was hard, and he was a jacked guy in Demolition, but Repo Man looked like he had dropped 50 pounds. Again, they were also testing for steroids at the time. And he'd lost a lot of muscle mass, and he was bald on top, and his hair wasn't long like when it was in Demolition, and so it was. I didn't put two and two together for years.
I knew who it was, and this is when I was like in and out watching. Like it's Saturday, put on wrestling. I remember putting it on and seeing fucking Repo Man, and watched a little bit, like doing one of the skits. And I turned it right off, and I looked at my buddy. I was like, "Oh, fucking stupid."
That was a terrible gimmick. Yeah.
There was shit like that. That I'm like, "Oh, I wonder what's going on in wrestling this week." Ugh. And I put something else on.
Yeah, he stole Macho Man's title or whatever.
Just this was him repossessing children's bicycles. And I guess if I look back on it now, I'd probably find it hilarious. But at the time, I'm just like, "Oh,
yeah, it was terrible." Awful. Well, what do you think of the match?
It might be the most boring I Quit match of all time.
Yeah.
With this gimmick, you know, I'm like,
predated the Magnum TA one, so technically this is the first one I've seen an I Quit match where they actually bring out the microphone.
Yeah, but even then the referee was shitty.
I don't think they've ever worked it like this before.
Because he's saying this, because he was saying it to Link, and I'm like, at least he better say it to Darso, which he did. You're in an arm bar, and he's in, what you say, Link, come on, give it up. Like, he's encouraging him to give it up. I'm like, what the fuck, ref? That's, you don't do that. And then I'm like, he's doing that to just the heel and not the baby face, and that's really bad. But no, Darso, come on, Darso. Come on, give it up. Like, he's the devil on his shoulder. Like, what are you doing? I could have watched these two guys just, like, throw each other around.
Yeah.
Because when part of this other match was just two big, burly guys banging into each other. And I was like, I can watch that. I like that. But they threw in an I Quit gimmick with these guys, and it doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit. And like, it was just like, you know, it was all like, here's an arm bar, you know, to try to make it quit. And finally, it was the backbreaker. The match gimmick was not suited for these guys' style of work. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, because they're not submission guys, and or even like super. I mean, they're brawlers, but not to the point. And we don't know the backstory on how personal the feud was, because to me, an I Quit match has got to be pretty damn personal, you know.
And also Missing Link wasn't wrestling like a total wild man, like I'm used to seeing the Missing Link. He's kind of just wrestling like Dewey Robertson with a stupid haircut, you know.
Yeah,
he wasn't a crazy man, you know, at all. There was no biting. He didn't slam his head with the chair. It was kind of dull.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I like the early part, like you were saying. I like the early Haas fight spots. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed seeing who's the stronger one. I liked Missing Link's forearms early on. And overall, I thought the feeling out process was done well. So the first, you know, I think Matt D said the first 3 minutes he enjoyed. I'm probably with him there.
That's about right.
Yeah. And I thought the submission work was really basic. But I did like Link beginning to soften up the back with the forearms and the camel clutch, the flying headbutt to the back. And But then Darso hooks on the full Nelson for a near submission, but the backbreaker gets it for Darso. So I gave it like 2 stars. I liked the early part, but yeah, it was boring and it didn't have that Terry Funk or Magnum TA feels against, you know, it didn't have the personal feel, and these guys aren't the quality of workers.
It didn't have the feel of Bret Hart and Bob Backlund.
Yeah. And an I Quit match on the underneath of card sounds weird almost in a way.
I know.
I mean, it's got to be the main event or semi-main. And here, I think it was like, I think on the placement of the card, it was like third or fourth match.
I did enjoy, there was the two people in the crowd, Link's looking at the crowd, and some guy just says, "Hey, weirdo." I was like, I like that guy. And then the Link does something, and some chick loudly screams, "You son of a bitch." Like, I want to be sitting next to them because they're enjoying this.
Yeah. I will say, when it was uploaded, I was like mildly intrigued because I was curious.
I was super. Yeah. Dude, when I saw that, I'm like, Crusher Darsall in the hillbilly gimmick versus Missing Link in an I Quit match? I was like, that sounds like it has potential.
Yeah. And you know? It just didn't work out.
Yeah.
There's parts of it that we like. Parts of it is, you know, shit the brick.
If they'd had a long-term feud and then the two of them were, say, bleeding in this.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Oh, that could be a blast. But this was, we're going to make you quit with an arm bar.
Yeah, and there was no blood. And yeah, I mean, and we've seen you can have a great I Quit match like Funk and Flair did without the blood. But here it just didn't work out.
Violence.
Yeah. Our next match is Dos Caras versus Bull Ramos, and this is from the Gold Cup from October 30th, 1981. What do you think about it, man?
This was a qualifying match to get in the Battle Royal.
Yeah.
I believe they said.
And the next night, I explained it last week, but I'll explain it again. With the Battle Royal for the next night, that's if you your placement of how you got eliminated was who you picked your opponent. So the first two guys are eliminated would wrestle, third and fourth people eliminated would wrestle the third, and so on and so on.
Right. Okay.
So it affected your seeding in the tournament.
I gotcha. I'm going to let you talk about the match. I'm going to say, as far as in-ring performance, I know I shit on Bull last time. I thought Bull was a lot of fun here.
Yeah, on paper, I was like, okay, this could be interesting.
I was not looking forward to this, and Bull made me like this.
Bull was the highlight here.
Yeah.
I thought this could be interesting. I like Caras early on using Ramos' size against him, and Ramos tried to set up a sneak attack, but it didn't work. Caras working inside, and bam, he hits this really nice drop kick. They're brawling on the floor, and Ramos gets posted. Ramos gets a chair, but Caras gets a small piece, which was really weird, and hits Ramos with it. Bull wants a handshake and gets one. Caras with an ear beel from the top, which I thought was funny as hell. And then Ramos is using a nerve hole to control Caras. And but Ramos has his odd charisma, and that's what carried the match here.
Yeah,
was,
totally.
It was his charisma and the stalling tactics and him playing kind of like hide and seek. I don't know how to or running away.
His facial expressions were off the chart.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, he was putting on a masterclass of playing to the cheap seats, expressing his emotions about every single thing that's going on through his hands, body, and facial expressions.
It's a guy who was physically shot, and that's
exactly,
he didn't have any of his real physical tools anymore, so he used the tools that he could to get by in the match, and he actually carried it because Karras, couldn't do that wearing a mask, and he works a certain style, and they weren't meshing, but I thought Ramos made it passable in a way.
Yeah.
But I did dig the last minute of this. I thought the last minute of this was terrible, but the first 10 minutes weren't great anyway. But the last minute was terrible, where their timing was off completely on both guys, and it looked almost like business exposing bad. But yeah, for the most part, though, I thought Ramos did a good job with what you were saying. But yeah, overall, the match was a stinker. What about you?
Well, I enjoyed it more than you because I just focused on Bull, but anyway, we talked about that already. Paul Bosch, he says Dos Karras, you know, like his brother Mil Mas Karras. I was like, does he think their last name is Karras? Because and that Mass is Mil's middle name or something. That's how he, and I'm sure that he did that on purpose. He thought that was witty as a joke. they're fighting to be in the Battle Royal. I love the piece of the chair because I didn't know what it was at first. I was like, what's he got? And Paul's like, the chair split in half in a way I've never seen a chair split in half before, a metal chair at that. And it looks like the size of a ping pong paddle, and he's like whacking him with it. And Paul starts saying, these fans are bloodthirsty. They're bloodthirsty here in Houston. Just very, you know, matter of fact. I was like, yeah, he's got a point. And I love the ref. I've said it before. Juan Rendoza he's becoming my favorite referee, because Juan Rendoza is a man's man and looks like a man's man, and he's letting him fight. No disqualification with this piece of metal in the ring. You know, Juan Rendoza lets men fight. I love this guy. He's fantastic. He looks like a movie star. And
if he was playing Sergeant Gonzalez or in Zorro, whatever was his name.
He looks like Luis Guzman in Boogie Nights.
Yeah, he has a little Luis Guzman in him. I will say that.
When they're
need one Luis Guzman in Hollywood.
Yeah, Juan Rendoza is a little more handsome, though. You know. Anyway, I just really like him as a referee. I've been seeing a lot of him lately. And I do think he's a pretty great ref, you know. And then Paul gets in. I'll finish up with this because there's a biting spot. Bull is biting Dos Karras' fingers. And the referee is like, did you bite? And Paul says, it's not the cow that ate the cabbage, but the bull that ate the fingers. Were they spicy fingers? Because you know, it's those cars, and it's Mexico. Yeah, that was what it was.
Oh, Jesus. Terrible.
That was, come on, that spicy fingers joke was not bad.
On that note, we will take a break, and we'll be right back to deal with the Ted DiBiase Odyssey this is incredible. All right. Be right back.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back. And my God, I mean, what did you call this, Johnny?
No. We were talking before the show about the order of the segments, you called this whole thing because it's a lot to it. It's two matches, it's promos, and it's outtakes. And you called it the Ted DiBiase Odyssey. And I loved that. And I was like, wait a minute, just shorten it a little, because to the Ted DiBiase. And I'm like, bingo. So it was a joint effort.
Yeah, there we go. So it's the Ted DiBiase. And this is just awesome. It starts off first, we get a Gordy and DiBiase cage match from October 17th, 1986. He also fights Michael Hayes in the cage in a country whipping cage match. And then him and Gordy cut promos. And for a whole entire segment on a way to finish up a show, and I want to mention, I was there live as a 14-year-old celebrating my birthday. And I had really fond memories of this. And I was talking to Matt D when it was uploaded, and I hadn't watched it yet. He goes, "What's your memories?" I go, "I just remember it being bloody. I hope my memories is correct." And they were. But I mean, this is just an incredible 35-minute segment here, a 35-40-minute segment, and it was a 5-star segment. We're gonna break it down piece by piece, and so it's a little different. But if you wrapped it all together, this is just an epic closing to a show, and it was freaking incredible. First up, we get Gordy and DiBiase. Originally, it's booked for Steve Williams. They claim he was injured, but in reality, he's in a tour of Japan. So DiBiase comes out, and Terry Gordy's the UWF champ at the time. And he challenges Gordy to a title match. But Gordy and Hayes are like, "No, we didn't sign a title match with you." And then DiBiase's like, "That's fine. Put your money where your mouth is, Gordy. I'll fight you." And bam, it's on. And it is a brawl. It also puts me back, because, like, I'm here for my 14th birthday. When I lived in St. Louis, my parents would take me to hockey games, was the big thing, with the St. Louis Blues. They'd always let me bring a friend with me for my birthday. They'd buy, and we'd get, like, front row tickets to the St. Louis Blues.
Nice.
And we do that all the time when I was younger. But when I got to Houston, wrestling became my passion. And from like 85, 86, it was UWF wrestling. 87, there wasn't, we didn't go to a wrestling, but in 88 and 89, we went to wrestling for my birthday. And in 88 and 89, I was old enough where they didn't go with me on my birthday because they hated wrestling. But it just brings back memories. But right here, man, oh, God. I mean, these guys are brawling right from Jump Street. I loved Gordy focusing on the back, and DiBiase's just throwing bombs and punching the shit out of Gordy. Gordy makes Ted taste the cage, and Gordy was so violent here. What he was doing to Ted into the corner buckles, like picking him up and slamming his neck, going neck first bumps, and then, you know, you see later how by 94 Ted was like, his neck was totally fucked, right? You can see here taking these type of bumps was why, because these are state of the art. People weren't taking bumps like this. I mean, these are even, right now they've become like the buckle bomb has become a big thing, but this is, in 1986, this is like the precursor to the buckle bombs. And what Gordy's doing is picking up and throwing Ted neck first into the buckles. And I was so violent. And the impact looks nasty. Ted puts Gordy in the cage, and he's busted open big. And my God, Ted is a freaking serial killer here. He's after that cut. He's freaking, from Silence on the Lambs, he's Hannibal Lectering the shit out of it.
Ted Bundy.
Yep. He's punching it. He's fist dropping it. He's biting it. He's
dropping it like it's a nurse on it.
Yeah. He's going after that cut. Finally, Gordy, who has size on him, hits a big punch from it and turns the tide. Big neck breaker by Gordy, which is a great callback and a great heat spot, because he worked over Ted's neck so much.
Yep.
And bam, right there, he's back to it. And then he goes to a belly-to-back, which causes more damage to the neck. Again, the neck into the turnbuckle, followed by a nasty lariat by Gordy. I mean, that was vicious-looking. Gordy looks like he hurts the leg on the atomic drop spot, which kind of at the very beginning of the match, he was limping. So that leg was hurt to begin with. Ted goes for the figure four, but gets kicked off. And Gordy's back to the neck again. But Ted is able to hit the pile driver, which 2 points is an awesome finish. One, it's a nasty revenge spot on getting his neck fucked up throughout the match. Two, because Gordy's freaking head is all busted open, bleeding like a freaking stuck pig. Him picking him up, all that blood rushing to his head, is a great finish. I mean, 4.5-star match here out of this cage match. Great finish. Makes perfect sense that a pile driver would finish him off with your head all freaking leaking blood. What do you make of this?
Okay, well, first of all, before I say anything, I've never thought of it that way. You know, makes perfect sense. I would also add that not just the work on the neck, that it's the revenge spot. It's the fact that they have nearly 7 years of history of the Freebirds Ted DiBiase's neck.
Yeah.
In Georgia, here, it's a thing. The Freebirds have a history of fucking up that guy's neck. They've done it. So that was all throughout this match too.
You know, I didn't even think about that, and I should be ashamed of myself. It makes it even more sweeter, and actually, I might even go 4 3/4 now just because of that.
God, did I do that?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to re-edit my notes too. Jesus Christ, that was awesome.
Fuck the hell, I have power. Anyway, before I get into the match. In fact, actually, I'm going to save this to the end of this match because it's something I want to talk to you about. Number one, this is Ted DiBiase babyface at the height of his babyfaceness. His hair is bleached, more blonde, as is his beard. He's good looking. He's in powder blue tights.
Walking tall babyface.
And he's coming out to Born in the USA. And even back then, this was at the height of me watching UWF as well. This is when we got it in New Jersey, and this was me and Wolfman every Saturday night watching UWF. But not this, you know, because they didn't know how often they showed Houston footage, I don't remember. But I never liked Born in the USA for DiBiase. I was like, it just doesn't fit. I don't like it when they use that song in wrestling anyway. I was like, it's Ted DiBiase. Give us something more badass. Something. Anyway, minor quibble. I just never liked him and Doc coming out to that. But he gets on the microphone, and this is when it just turns up. He gets that fucking mic, and he goes, you know, let me tell you something, Terry Gordy. You know, Doc's out, and I'm here to take his place. You know, it's badass. And Terry Gordy's all like, argh. And then goddamn Hayes gets on the mic. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, about you being in the crowd, I'm in the crowd at what is essentially a house show, more or less. They're running a full angle here. There's stuff going on here that you don't normally see throughout this whole thing, because it leads into the next match and everything. And I'm like, you're seeing
on,
that just...
on TV, because I was on the part of, I helped on the Mid-South, put the Mid-South set together. They showed about 6 minutes of highlights of the Williams, I mean, of the DiBiase. Gordy match. They never showed the Michael Hayes portion of it.
But this is a storyline thing going on just for you and your audience, because it ties into the rematch and everything. And you're like, once you kind of realize that, you're like, oh, this is bigger than normal.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The TV. Yeah. Let me hold on real quick.
I'm sorry.
And then they showed the promos, what they showed later on. Uh-huh. They showed those.
Okay.
But yeah, like they never acknowledged the Michael Hayes portion of it.
They were
just going on, showing up because they were trying to build the rematch and stuff. But go on.
Okay, sorry. And then we're down. Bloody as fuck. This is bloody as fuck. And Hayes gets on the microphone and he goes, let me tell you something, DiBiase. This ain't Morrison's cafeteria. You just can't come up here and take a number. I'm like, God damn it. I loved them. Oh, they were so fucking awesome. And then at one point, though, you hear someone at ringside gets picked up on the live mic, and I imagine they get fired maybe over this one. At least if Bill Watts would have. You hear someone, maybe it's the timekeeper or something, and he says, I like the cage matches. You can't get hurt.
Yeah, I heard that. I was like, what the hell? I had no idea what the fuck it was.
And me too. I'm like, well, obviously the two guys in the ring didn't say. Who said that? I'm like, oh, maybe it's one of the guys who sits at the table. Yeah. And it's like they can't spill out on top of me is what he meant. But definitely what he meant by that. But it did sound kind of odd. And yeah, that spinning neck breaker from Gordy was just a thing of beauty. Because lots of times spinning neck breakers never really look devastating. And that thing just looked like he just ripped it one-handed, one arm. Yeah. And just looked like he ripped his fucking head off.
The timing on it was beautiful.
Amazing. And then they get to the end, you know, and Ted's got the goddamn belt. Place is going fucking apeshit.
Yeah, that was even sweeter, is that he takes the belt with him. Yeah.
Yeah, and but because to that live crowd, okay, to that live crowd, you're like, Ted won the fucking belt. You're not really hearing Michael Hayes on this one microphone saying, it wasn't a legal match. You just thought you saw the title change.
Yep.
The place fucking went crazy. It almost made me realize, maybe he made a mistake not putting that belt on fucking DiBiase based on this goddamn reaction.
Yeah, it was a huge reaction. Yep.
Holy shit. But before we move on, one of the things that kind of always bugged me about when the Freebirds came into UWF and it became UWF in this glory period was I was always like, well, the Freebirds are the top guys, but they're a tag team. And I was like, why is half of a tag team the champion? I couldn't get past that for the longest time. It really bugged me because and one of the guys on the tag team is the TV champion and he's the announcer. And I'm like, but they're a tag team. And I realized, no, they brought them in as a faction.
Yeah, I viewed them like as the Horsemen.
Yeah, it was. See, I just associated them with being a tag team so much that there was always that thing I couldn't get past.
Yeah, because you're used to seeing them on Georgia TV. They were the tag team. And in World Class, they were always after the six-man belts and stuff like that. Yeah.
Exactly. So it occurred to me while watching this amazing footage last night, I'm like, wait a minute. They're a faction. They're not a tag team. They're a gang. And they're all individuals in the gang. I'm like, okay. And it was, I had my little epiphany moment that I got over that thing and went, oh. And now I realize that period of time when they arrived and the UWF first exploded, where there was glory days of wrestling in that promotion. Just some of the best shit I ever remember seeing involved these guys. Love this.
Yeah, that was like one of our big things was how great Michael Hayes, because always the reputation was that Terry Gordy was like the great worker and Buddy Roberts was really good and Hayes was the third wheel. Mm-hmm. But watching Hayes and Buddy Roberts work with some of these more polished workers as opposed to the Von Erichs, you realize how damn good they were and stuff. And wow. But yeah, this thing was just an incredible case.
Oh my God, damn, Terry Gordy was. Because through this match, Ted doesn't bleed, just Gordy does. And he is covered in blood all down his chest. It's dried onto his chest.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It was like, oh, yeah, Gordy, man. I mean, God. He's had a lot of great matches on the service that we've seen from Houston. This might be his best one. My favorite.
I was about to say this is my favorite one, but then I thought you would possibly point out something that I obviously forgot about.
Well, I liked his two of them that he had with Doc. I liked those a lot. But yeah, I think this might be it.
I like this better because Ted DiBiase, let's face it, Ted DiBiase is a better wrestler than Steve Williams.
Yes, he is. But yeah, but I agree with you. I thought this was. And then, especially after you bring up the damn Georgia, and that was, 1982?
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, God, maybe 81? I mean, That's just 5 years ago. Fuck.
They did it to him in Georgia, and they did it to him in Mid-South.
Yeah, this is the Mid-South one. I think it was 79. They did. I can't
promise. I don't remember. You know, let's face it. There's a lot of Ted DiBiase getting crippled on the concrete.
This really adds a lot, especially when you think about the history. The birds have fucked up DiBiase's neck. They know. Yeah, they don't need to go to a doctor. They don't need the doctor report. Right. The secret doctor report. They know what they've done to this man in the past. And that actually makes it so much sweeter when I think about it.
And add in the fact, because this is a fact. They didn't hit you over the head with it, but they did let you kind of know, especially Bill Watts, that, you know, while you were seeing poor Ted get smashed on that concrete, getting carried away, they remind you that that man's father died in the ring.
Yep.
So could it happen again? They play that up because he had to spend time in hospitals when there was nothing wrong with him just for kayfabe.
Yeah. Yep.
And he would talk about he'd have a week off. And be in the hospital and just kayfabe. That's how we got a vacation.
True. And then this leads to the country whipping match. And this isn't like we've seen, like how they did that dynamic duo where they'd have like Tully and Mil Máscaras have a match, and then Gino comes out and interferes, and then Chavo comes out, and then Chavo and Gino have his match. Ted DiBiase goes to the back. He comes, so there. This is like an extra separate match.
Yeah.
So he comes out and he's wearing the belt, which is something you got to remember. Like, okay, now the crowd really believes they've seen a title change because Ted is now out for the country whipping cage match wearing the belt, and I love this.
Yeah, it's great.
Hayes and DiBiase are just whipping each other good. Ted, with that fist drop, is just a thing of beauty. Hayes is really great in selling this style of match. He's always been great at when he gets whipped. He's like, he flails around and stuff. Like, he looks like the biggest pussy on the planet, you know, when he gets hit. I mean, it's just fantastic. Teddy eats the cage, is busted open. Now he's bleeding like a mofo. And Hayes is now, the roles are reversed, and Hayes is working the cut. He rolls the country whipping belt into his fist, and he's punching that even more to inflict more blood damage. Love it. Every time Hayes went for the belt, I liked that Ted had an answer for it. And then Ted pins him after like a big punch. I think this only went like 5 minutes or so, but it was like a 3.5-star brawl. Mm-hmm. Really good stuff. But if you combine it with the whole entire segment, it's just like incredible 5-star segment. And we haven't even talked about the promos yet.
Well,
what'd you make about this thing here?
So you have Ted come out and take his friend's place valiantly. But I imagine the match with Hayes was also advertised.
It was.
Okay, so not only did he come out and have a brawl, a war, to win the title, he goes back in now. He's coming back out because these people paid to see me whip your ass, Hayes.
Yep.
And now I'm the goddamn champion while I'm going to whip your ass, Hayes. And, I like my Ted.
That's the whole thing that they were doing around the horn. They were doing.
Yeah.
Doc was feuding with Gordy. Ted was feuding with Hayes, but they were also doing tag matches, country whipping tag matches, all this type of stuff. So, I mean, it's like I go back to, like, I like to use the term umbrella storytelling. This is part of the umbrella and stuff. And,
big. But this is. It's connecting into the overall storylines of Watts, but it's also just for Houston because, as we find out later, Ted has the belt hostage, and he's not giving it back to Terry Gordy until he has another fight with him.
Yep, and they booked that for Halloween night. Yep.
But I love when Ted comes out with the belt, that place is going goddamn nuts.
Bananas.
And the guy is on my favorite announcer guy. He's like, please clear the aisles and return to your seats. And he yells that like seven times because that's how crazy everyone's going, trying to get to be at ringside, surround Ted DiBiase to catch him, come down and kill this motherfucker. Then you just hear one guy who was like my soulmate just yell at everyone who's standing up and he can't see. He just goes, sit down. I'm like, yes, thank you.
And you gotta think, I'm here live too. You gotta think, and I think at my point, I think I've seen a world title change.
Exactly.
And this would be the first one I've ever seen live. Okay. Uh-huh. Of course, it ends up not being it, and it would be three more years later when I was in Chicago with my dad, who was he had an office in Chicago, and he was closing it down, and part of the deal was I'd go, he'd take me to Chi-Town Rumble. When Steamboat beat Flair for the title,
nice.
If I came and helped him move out of the office. And so that would be my first world title change I ever saw.
As far as the match goes, I love the whips. I love the, at one point, Michael Hayes is choking Ted with the belt and tosses him into the cage. And I think that's probably where it gets busted open. And it looks fucking great. But then we get the interview.
Yes.
Okay, the interviews.
Well, let's talk about the ones that aired, and then we'll talk
about the ones that aired. That's what I'm going to talk about first. And I just want to talk about Ted first. So Ted's sitting there on a folding chair. He's bloody. He's got the belt. And we've heard via Hayes yelling afterwards and stuff. He's like, that wasn't an official match. That was never signed for. That was not a title match. So he's sitting there with the belt, and he goes, he basically says, he goes, I know that officially I'm not the champ, but I beat you, Gordy. I put your shoulders down for the 1-2-3 in that ring. So now I'm going to say that I'm unofficially the champ because I got me a belt and I put you down and I'm going to hold that belt, you know, until you try to come and take it and give me another chance at it. I'm just like, oh, fuck yes. That is so good. It's so badass. Because, you know what? Because Ted DiBiase is a good guy, but Ted DiBiase is still a goddamn bad guy deep down.
At heart, yep.
You know, because he's just like, I just stole your fucking belt. What you going to fucking do about it? You know, if Ted DiBiase, you know, didn't have the fans behind him and told someone that he stole his belt and you're going to have to come and get it, people would be booing him. You know, but no. So it's great. So he's Ted DiBiase. He's got a nice hairdo now and he's pretty. But he's still fucking one loaded glove away from, you know, cheating my way for anything. And it's badass because you have to fight fire with the fucking Freebirds. It's so good. Oh.
Yeah, it's a babyface promo, but it has a twinge of heelness to it, you know?
Totally. I loved it. You know, and of course you're cheering. Like, yeah, because everyone wants to. Because when he does pull out that fucking loaded glove when he's a babyface, that place explodes. Because people want to cheer for that shit. They just want to cheer for you doing good with your evil, you know. And then we get Gordy, and he's covered in blood.
Ice pack.
The giant ice pack. He has a giant ice pack on his head on one side, and all he needs is one of those Flintstones-sized pieces of steak from the fridge on his other head because he's a giant bloody caveman. In from the South, because as eloquent as DiBiase was, there's nothing eloquent about this, and that's why it's awesome. He's just, DiBiase, you have something that belongs to me, boy. And he's scary. This is a scary motherfucker. And he's like, you might have been some kind of good football player down the West Texas State, but I don't mean nothing up here amongst men in the big. I'm getting my boat back, boy. And it's just visceral. It's not what you would call a great promo as far as like, oh, he really put the words together well, but it doesn't matter. It's visceral and powerful. The image is just, it'll burn in your mind.
Because you got across like you felt like he believed every fucking word he was saying.
But he's really good at this.
And I thought it was the best Terry Gordy promo I've ever heard.
I would imagine. I can't think of a better one.
I mean, he gets a bad rap for being a promo guy, But, you know, here and there, man, like, he'll hit a grand slam like this one was fucking tremendous.
Yeah, and I remember hearing one from World Class that was really, really good, and then it got racist, so then I had to go, You know, it's like, he fell into that because he got nervous, because he's, let's face it, Terry Gordy is awesome, one of the best wrestlers ever, I always thought. And he started doing it when he was, what, 13, 14 or something?
Some ridiculous age,
Some kid who never had an education. Okay, so, no, he's a big, apparently a really sweet guy, too. Because you see that when we get into these outtakes, because he's going to do this promo. And he mumble mouse over some words, and instead of yelling at anyone else, he kind of goes, like, looks at himself and goes, like, stupid. You know, I felt so bad for him. But then when he nails it, he nails it.
Yeah,
and this I can't imagine there was a couple takes on this one, because obviously there was two. But yeah. He nails it. This is scary. It's literally frightening.
Yeah, the promo was the icing. I thought everything was so incredible. Easily one of the most incredible segments. I don't think I've blown smoke up anyone's ass.
We're not.
This is one of the most incredible segments, from the opening cage match to the angle to the other match to the promos. I think as a 40-minute segment, I thought this was about as good as wrestling. This is about you can't really get any better. This is about as good as it gets when it comes to fucking wrestling.
And think about this. This is part one of this story, because there's a sequel.
Yep.
You know, I'm just like, this is part one. This is the cliffhanger. Here's the cliffhanger. Ted DiBiase has the belt, you big bloody redneck. What you gonna do about it? I'm coming to get my belt, you know, you thief. You know, next month, you know, or next week, or whatever the fuck it is in Houston. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is awesome wrestling and compelling fucking storytelling that has a lot of we've talked about callbacks to shit that happened in other territories.
Yep.
It's perfect. And call me a vampire all you want and everything. It's covered in goddamn blood.
I love it. I agree. I totally agree. The rematch is Halloween night. So far we have, speaking of blood, but so far we've gotten one match from that show. So there's a good chance.
Nice.
There's a chance. I mean, we have one that's made it. So there's a chance that another match, it might show up.
That's got it.
And I hope so. My God. Bruce,
who retweeted the link to our last show, by the way. Thanks, Bruce. Bruce, if you're listening, make it happen. You know, make us wait for it, though. Tease us like the little bitches we are. But we better get that. We better get them at that rematch.
Yeah. If it's there, I'm sure it'll show up eventually.
Oh, of course.
Oh, man. Oh, God. I can't put over this angle, this match. It was so awesome. I remember my memories. This is even greater than my memories even serve me. Which a lot of times that's not the case.
No. Yeah. Usually
not at all.
It's usually the opposite.
But, my God, awesome stuff. Oh, man. I can't believe how awesome this was.
But I just want to real quick talk about the outtakes. They include them. Basically, it's a blooper reel of these two awesome promos. So first is Ted's, and Ted has this one. He's sitting in his chair. He's getting ready to start doing the promo, and they're not ready. The camera guy's not ready, and Ted's sitting there. He's got blood in his fucking face. He's fucking tired. And he's like, oh, sorry, Ted. And he goes, oh, come on, guys. He's just like, be professional. The Million Dollar Man. What am I paying you for?
Yeah.
but then he delivers this promo, and it's the exact promo we heard, except, and he gets through a lot of complicated language here. It's a very well done, off the top of his head, smart promo. When it gets to saying the name of the belt, because there's the UWF Universal, he stumbles over that because that's the only new information that he has to work with. He's like, oh, they changed the name of this macaque belt. He still wants to call it the North American belt.
Yeah.
It's the only mistake he makes, because he's right. It's that mouthful, you know, because everything else is second nature to him. You know, and then Terry Gordy starts out. He's just standing there. And someone goes, anytime you want. And he just goes, rah! into that promo, but then he stumbles over some words, and like we said, he's like, God damn it. It just was so off-putting to see, you know, like this crazy thing happened and him just stop and be like, okay, hold on, like, let me get it together. Fine, what character am I doing here? All right, good. like he's De Niro. Because then he comes back, boom, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I feel like I'm Terry Gordy because I trip over words constantly and stuff.
Are you usually covered in that much blood?
No, thank God.
Dude, he looked like a giant hillbilly version of Carrie.
Yep. Just
a bucket of blood, but real blood.
Oh. Yeah, and it's all dried up, and it's in his bangles, and his hair. Oh, so
It's great. It's great. I know a lot of people go, oh my goodness, Stone, I can't believe these guys did that. And I'm, you know what? It happened. I'm not gonna fucking. Was blading kind of a ridiculous thing to do? Yes, of course it is. But me saying that is going to make the past go away, and I enjoy watching these guys being covered in blood. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a different time, you know. It was acceptable back then. I think it's safer to do the blade than it is to do some of the stuff that they do nowadays. So.
Well, yes, yeah, that's an argument to have. Of course it is, but still, holy, you know, I mean, think about that. You know, I'm going to cut myself with a razor.
Yeah, no, it's not the smartest thing to do in the world.
But,
I think it's safer than taking a bump through a table.
Oh, it is. Of course it is. Well, you know, but unless it's my razor blade, because you don't know where I've been. But
that's true.
But I'm going to also say one of my favorite things about wrestling when I was growing up was seeing these guys covered in their own blood.
Yep.
I admit it. You know, so, and this was it.
I like a bloody brawl.
I love it.
You know? Oh, gosh.
Bloody brawl.
All right, man. We'll wrap it up. Just follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Remember, NWAOnDemand.com. Buy the service. You get the first week free. You can watch this match and so many other legendary matches. Get the Tubio app. You can watch from your telephone and then stream it all the way onto your Roku so you can watch it on your TV.
Yeah, you whiners.
You know, for people who are saying, oh, I'm waiting for the Roku app. Well, this Tubio app works just like the Roku would. there. Oh, man. Anything, John, you want to add?
Just the Ted DiBiase Freebird stuff on this today is worth the price. The deal. Worth the deal. Like, hey, you want to think about giving it a shot? Give it a shot and watch this right away, and that you've just gotten your money's worth. It's that good. I'm not overselling this. It's seriously that good.
Yeah, for sure. Easily. All right, guys. Have a great week. Watch wrestling. Doesn't matter if it's old school, new school, indies, WWE, or anywhere around the world. It's wrestling. Enjoy what we all love, wrestling. Peace out, folks.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden. King of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes, look high.